Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited to start off our day today with my co-host, Scott McIntosh, Conscious Capitalism Arizona chapter founder.
Correct.
And also co-founder for Max 6 Communities.
Great to be here. Thank you.
It's kind of fun. We haven't done a co-host piece before.
My first time.
Yeah, we've had you on as a guest. And then I think it was on Business Solutions with John Deiter.
Right.
And then most recently with Scott Marsh on Think Fit, Get Fit, Stay Fit.
Yep, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, happy to have you back. And very excited today to welcome our guest from Phoenix Business Journal, Greg Barr, the new editor-in-chief. Welcome, Greg.
Glad to be here.
Can I say new anymore? Because it's been a handful of months.
Well, 6 months.
Okay, so we can't say you're new. Honeymoon period is over, right?
It's long gone.
And joining Greg today is managing editor Patrick O'Grady. Welcome, Patrick.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and you've been with the Phoenix Journal for...
almost 11 years.
Has it been that long? I remember Ray sharing that when Greg and I met not too long ago.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah, especially in this profession.
Yes, that's what I understand.
People
and
bounce around.
Yeah. Right. And you asked me before the on-air button came on if I was in the Peoria area. Are you up north? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been out there for, I used to work out in the West Valley, so it was easy for me. Now I drive downtown, which is nice.
Yeah. So Dan, our producer, is in Peoria. In Goodyear. Got it. But I'm an East Valley girl. And Greg, tell me where you landed.
I'm in Midtown. So really, I wanted to get something that I could get to work in a hurry.
And
so,
you've done that.
Which I've done.
And that is a booming area right now.
It is. It is. It's just, I see, you know, I'll drive by the construction every day, just in my short little trip to get to the office.
Love it. Well, let's get started. Before we really talk about kind of the state of the economy and, you know, Phoenix business community, I would love to introduce our listeners to both of you professionally. If we could start with you, Greg, I mentioned that obviously you're new to PBJ, but you are not new to the whole company itself. So just get us caught up. We've got an hour. So tell us a little bit about who you are and then how you landed here.
Okay, well, I've been, our parent company is American City Business Journals, which, has a presence in 43 cities in the country. This is actually my third stop in the business journal world. Started in 2006 at the Houston Business Journal and was a writer, editor there. Covered a lot of different things and then moved on to the Austin Business Journal. I was the managing editor there for nearly 5 years. From there, had the opportunity to become editor in Phoenix. So I figured Texas wasn't quite hot enough. I needed to go somewhere just a bit hotter in the summer and landed here.
Well, we've got hot summers for you. Yeah. And Patrick, what is it like for you to make this shift and welcome in? Because I know you've been there for, you just said minutes ago, 11 years, and most of your team has been on board for a long time.
Yeah. We don't change much.
Right.
You know, I mean, we have residential real estate reporter's been there for more than 30 years. So we have a lot of experience and depth in the community, which is kind of nice. But I think that, you know, when you get into a position where you can have some people come in from the outside, obviously you've met our publisher, Ray Shea, it can bring a little bit of a different vision and kind of different perspective on how we do things. Because sometimes you get trapped in a rut where you have people who are there forever doing the same thing the same way, and you need that kind of different perspective.
And we had Ray on not too long ago on Jody's show, Leadership Lowdown, and one of the things he was speaking to is the landscape having changed for you guys as a publication. And I know that's part of why Ray was very excited to have Greg coming on board to be able to help really amplify and really up-level what y'all are doing.
Well, we're really in a situation now, you know, in all the business journals that we're fortunate in this media landscape, which has been battered and bruised, that, you know, keeping a local focus in each market around the country and being hyper focused in that area is really what we're about. And it's helped us in the long run. You know, there's lots of other things that are happening in the news world right now that we have to adjust to. It's one of these things where my job is changing constantly and Patrick's is changing. You have to keep up with the change, you know, or fall behind and adapt. And if I would have thought what I'm doing now, you know, was what I was would have been doing 5 years ago, I would never have quite have imagined all the little pieces and the intricacies from a technical point of view that, you know, we have to deal with. So
I think any one of us could say the same.
100%, yes.
Yeah. So, Patrick, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself. Obviously, you've been with the Journal for quite some time, and you have a family here. Yeah. What brought you to journalism and this particular role?
I had spent like 12 years out in the West Valley covering all the communities out there, primarily the Northwest Valley. So I saw the growth out in Surprise and Peoria and Glendale. Worked for community newspapers, started a few papers, worked for a startup. You know, I mean, did the whole nine yards doing every job every time. And this opportunity came up probably right as the recession was taking hold. So it was a really good time to get into business journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I covered technology for about 5 years and covered the whole solar industry growing up and kind of flailing out here and saw a lot of different things. So it was just, you know, just chasing different opportunities and kind of exploring the valley and doing all this stuff here.
Yeah, excellent. So let's talk about the hyperlocal business community. And before we talk about maybe the forecast for 2019, let's talk a little bit about 2018 and what each of us kind of saw. Is there something from the PBJ's perspective that y'all kind of look back and go, wow, this was interesting, or thank goodness for XYZ?
Well, I mean, the big thing that happened, you know, last year, that, and we just got some of these numbers just recently that, you know, maybe didn't surprise some people, but, you know, a lot of people maybe taken aback, but, you know, the fact that we had so many jobs created here last year, more than 86,000, and that's, you know, nearly double the normal average year, the amount of jobs. You know, we had so many big companies moving in and organic growth going on. You know, it's going to create a lot of long-term challenges for us with infrastructure and things like that. But at the same time, we are a hot market right now. No matter what happens in, you know, the next couple of years, we'll see. But right now, we have to get used to this new way of doing things. And the fact that, you know, all the other things that come along with that, that I've seen up close, and I've seen the bad and the good in Austin and Houston over the years, what can happen. We have to avoid the pitfalls, hopefully, and, you know, have a clear vision, which interested me coming from the outside. I saw last year, and some of the people that I met, the economic development people like Chris Camacho and Sandra Watson, and talking to the economic people in various cities, I really actually did get a little bit more of a sense of awareness of what's going on in the other cities. I won't say, you know, exactly cooperation per se, but, you know, there is a sense of being in this together. I didn't see that in Austin, where the city of Austin was kind of isolated and the surrounding cities weren't exactly playing ball with them often and sort of, you know, weren't very happy with some of their policies, but it created a kind of a division at times. So that was a pleasant surprise last year.
One of the things that I've noticed in working with Conscious Capitalism Arizona is exactly what you said, this camaraderie. I don't know that we can quite put our finger on who Arizona is as a business community. You know, I think some will say it's tech, some will say it's startup. Greg's shaking his head. No, I think it's bigger than that. Sure, those are little pieces of it, but I think we really are the new frontier. We are a group of business owners and large to medium to small corporations, in addition to our educational entities and our government agents. Most everybody wants to play together. Don't you think, Scott?
It's a fascinating conversation as this whole playing together. And as you mentioned, Sandra Watson and Chris Camacho, just a few weeks ago, we had a meeting at Arizona Commerce Authority. And in conscious capitalism, we talk about it as a stakeholder orientation. And all that really means is on a long term, we're looking for win-win versus win-lose. And hey, there's competition and sometimes there's winners and sometimes there's losers, but how do we find those win-wins? And so certainly as I've known Sandra for a long time. She's a personal friend and the work that I see her doing and Governor Ducey is doing and bringing in the tech businesses and kind of a focus on that and higher paying jobs. But where the win-win comes from, and it's not talked about so much, or I'd be curious you guys' opinion is, Adam Goodman and they sell furniture. And so that's not tech. But at the same time, as we bring in higher paid jobs, there's kind of wins for everybody, whether you sell furniture or butcher, baker, candlestick makers, or Uber or Lyft or whatever that may be. And so I'm just, Greg, I'm curious, as you came from Austin, which is much more of a sort of hot entrepreneurial center, and I'd call Arizona is a, we're going to put our own stamp on it, and as certainly as I'm involved in it, a developing entrepreneurial center with far more than that. And it's not just Phoenix, it's Tucson and Flagstaff and those areas as well. So I just compare and contrast to Austin and where we are here in Arizona and what you see there. I think it's a great landscape right now.
Yeah, well, I think, and Patrick can probably add a more long-term perspective to this, but you know, the thing is you can't quite compare to Austin because it's such a microcosm and it's a much smaller city. And the thing that I noticed when I moved there, even from, you know, I was in Houston before and moving to Austin, is everything's, you know, everyone is working on top of each other, and it's the central city core is so compact and alive with people. Like, it's every day you walk on every sidewalk downtown just to go anywhere, and it's, you're bumping people on the sidewalks. Like, it's everybody's out walking and going to coffee meetings and talking. Yeah. And you see CEOs over there, and it's a little obviously different in a bigger city like this that's so spread out. Same thing was when I was in Houston. You just, you know, the downtown, our downtown here in Phoenix is much farther ahead, I think, than even where Houston's is now. It's just still kind of foreboding down there. But I think, getting to what you said earlier, Scott, though, I think we still have to figure out what our identity is here. We haven't quite figured that out yet. No. I've talked to so many different people, and no one can really give me a clear picture on what that is. You know, we're trying to attract the, what I call it, like the intellectual property type jobs, the ones that pay more, the ones that have more, that'll stick and create more jobs, in terms of startups and in terms of companies that are bringing in financial services that aren't just the back office type jobs, you know, the ones that are, you know, paying more money. You know, that's a good growth path, and that's where Chris and Sandra want us to go. Whether we'll get there, we'll have to see.
I like that idea, identity, because I don't know either. And how do we, what is the identity of Phoenix for, whether it's not just tech businesses, but anybody coming into this, the Southwest to grow their businesses? I'm not sure either. It's a great question.
Yeah. You know, when I was covering tech, I used to talk with Jim Golka, who runs Arizona Tech Investors. And I always used to ask him, okay, so Silicon Valley versus the Valley, where are we? And he's always like, late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
He's like, that's about where we are. And I think that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, it's like everybody wants to get together. And I saw that always in the tech community, because there were fewer companies like startups and small businesses. And everybody wants to help everyone succeed, because they're looking at it from a perspective of, okay, if my company succeeds, I can help this next person and show them kind of who to connect with, what to do, where to go. And that's one of the things I always hear about the tech market here in particular, and generally the business market in general, is there's this ability to, if you want a meeting with someone, you just call them up and ask. And yep. They'll be like, yeah, sure. Hey, I've got some time, you know, Tuesday to meet right. You for coffee. I think that openness and that willingness of the business community has really had a big impact on Phoenix. As far as kind of what we are and where we're going, we want to be a tech center of some kind. I think we've wanted to be a tech center since the 70s, since Intel came here with Motorola. I think we've had a lot of that foundation here. I think that, you know, I think we're taking some shots at some different things. You look at fintech, you look at autonomous vehicles. I think that's kind of where we want to go. Whether those technologies pan out, well, we'll see. But I think that, you know, we have an idea of what we want to be. Right now, we're just kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, we're a general business community. We don't really kind of specialize in anything. I think we've kind of broken away from being the growth specialist of, hey, we have to build houses to have an economy, or we have to build buildings to have an economy. So I think that that's kind of where we are. We're in that weird transition stage where we're going to be something else. It's just a question of where we're going to land.
Right. I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, Jim Gulk is a friend as well, and yeah. I do angel investment. And as I first met Jim 5 or so years ago, and before I joined ATI, and I asked Jim, why are you doing what you're doing? And yeah. It's angel investment. I thought he'd say something about 10 times returns and something, but he said, we need to grow Phoenix as a community, and Arizona is a community where startups that are growing here don't have to run off to Silicon Valley or Austin to grow their businesses.
Right.
And so it's sort of capturing that identity of what that is and what is different here. And we need more investment here for companies as they're scaling. But we do have something very special here that I certainly feel, but maybe haven't put that identity. What are the three words that describe it quite explicitly yet?
It took Austin a while to get past the Silicon Valley thing too. I mean, everybody sort of holds that out as the example.
Right.
And when I moved there in 2013, that was kind of in the back of the conversation. And, you know, well, look what Silicon Valley's doing. And, you know, why can't we do that? But then by the time I left, the city had come to grips with the fact that, well, we have to be what we want to be. And they did that, and they've become this mega startup engine. Unbelievable, the number of startups and the number of, they've become a sort of a second corporate campus for a lot of big companies, you know, like Apple, et cetera, you know, have huge campuses in there. Facebook, all these West Coast companies are in there now and in the mix of the startups. So they've created an identity along the way instead of trying to be something else.
Right.
And almost we kind of do, but nobody realizes it. Like, financial services here is huge, and it's getting bigger. You know, you look at Deloitte is putting operations out in, where is it, Gilbert? I can't remember. But yes, Gilbert or Chandler. You've got, Allstate is putting operations out in the East Valley. You have State Farm is doing it. So there's a huge base of that. You look at educational software. We have a lot of big companies that do various things in educational software, kind of the behind the scenes things people don't think about. So we're kind of developing it. And as people become more aware of these companies and as they get bigger, it will tend to draw more things into us.
Right.
I wanted to ask you a question, actually, because we have an angel investor in the room here. So we just ran the report last Friday on venture capital and angel investing and the numbers that came out in the fourth quarter in the year. And it was a pretty staggeringly big year for venture capital and angel investing in Arizona ending the year, and one of the best years in a long time. Then I also contrast with a story I read today that we carried on our site from the New York Times, one of our editorial content partners, about some founders saying, well, wait a minute, maybe we don't want to give our money away to venture capitalists and other investors, you know, or give our company away. We're going to strictly grow by bootstrapping, you know, because we're scared of being told that you have to double your sales in the next year by a new owner. What do you think about, you know, that as an angel investor?
So there's not a short answer to the right. to the question. As my backstory and success, when I grew an engineering business, 100% grew it on cash flow. And so I'm a cash flow guy and bootstrapping sort of a guy. And so, but I think the real answer is there's a time and a place for bootstrapping with businesses, and there's a time and a place where whether angel, venture capital, or private equity money can accelerate the growth of a business. And I think too often entrepreneurs are too simplistically looking in, okay, I need to be the next whatever, and I have to have this investment to accelerate. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Investment, and so I'm an investor, but the first thing I talk with them about is, do you need investment money? And because my investment comes with strings attached, it just does. It's interesting. Angel investment. While we always talk about exits, and you have to have an exit of some kind, because that the investment doesn't go on forever, tends to put a shorter term view on things. But angel investors, in fact, are far more flexible because they're individuals. Then the venture capital gets a little dicier, and that you've got professional managers who are managing other people's money that creates expectations. And so sure. I'm being a little too long-winded on the answer here. But for me, I totally discount any of those concerns about, I mean, bootstrapping is right for some, and you do it, and others, when it's appropriate and you want to accelerate your growth and you have the market in front of you. The ideal situation is I'm growing my business. I don't need your angel venture money, but if I had your angel venture money, this is what we could do together. And it's just different sizes fit different businesses.
Do you think that we'll be able to have such another huge year this year like we did last year in terms of the amount of money that's, you know, being flowing into Arizona companies?
subject to whatever happens in the world in various ways, and things can happen. But I mean, just the economy seems to be doing very well, and certainly it's a world of abundance. And here in Greater Phoenix, and it's just Arizona, because I'm part of Desert Angels down in Tucson as well. They actually do more investment than ATI does up here, and University of Arizona and bio and medical and those sorts of things. So it's not just Phoenix that we're talking about here, but. I see just huge opportunity continue to come. I see more and more people are seeing Arizona and Phoenix as a place that has more startups that are investing in. The Jim Gulka ATI thing is the angel groups are starting to network with each other and syndicate to deals together, which is helping to fund some of the gaps from what traditionally was angel investment to that venture capital. They're syndicating deals between not just Arizona, but it's California, Colorado, other states. And it just, as kind of word gets out, yes, I think this is going to continue to be robust.
Okay.
How about health and medical? Are we still drawing in the companies? Are we still a destination for those industries, that vertical?
Yeah, I think so. The challenge with health and medical when you deal with stuff like bio is it's such a long time to develop.
Right.
So you get this initial flush of information, like, what was it, 10 or 15 years ago, the bio corridor and all the biotech stuff downtown. And then it's like, nobody hears anything. But they're still building it. I mean, if you go down, 7th Street and look at that biotech campus, it's big. So it's growing. It's continuing to do things. It's a slower process, and it takes a lot of capital to do. But it's still growing. It's still doing things. And then you look at healthcare. You look at what all of the healthcare systems are doing, just like hospitals and that, there's a tremendous amount of growth there because, I mean, they have, hundreds of millions of dollars of projects in the pipeline trying to get to areas that either are underserved because of growth or that, they really didn't get to because of the recession. They put everything on hold. So now they're kind of like, okay, well, we've got to expand this. We've got to expand that. So, yeah.
Yeah. When your suburbs are growing this quickly, you have to bring healthcare services to where people are moving to and living in. And so that's where we're seeing this shift. Also, just in general, it's just the numbers add up, right? You've got one of the fastest growing cities in the country here, or one of the fastest growing metro areas. So healthcare services will continue to expand to meet the population needs.
And we need it not to limp along. We need it to be cutting edge. And we've had Virginia G. Piper Cancer Center on a handful of times. We have a show called Best of Health. And so I've seen, at least in small pockets, that we really continue to be on the forefront of some of these decisions as it relates to healthcare and insurance and that sort of thing.
Yeah. At the new medical school, the Creighton Medical School, that's going to be coming, on Central Avenue, that is should be another catalyst to what will go hand in hand, maybe, with the biotech center downtown. This is something that can spur more innovation and spinoffs. The big thing these days is, spinning off technology from educational campuses. You've got to have a really strong pipeline for that. I think, I hear about some measures that are going to be taken here that people are working on, some things to get our commercialization cranked up in Phoenix. Austin did that when they had their new medical school come in a couple of years ago. It was a completely new concept for a medical school and how they were going to, it was all going to be based on the new model of not pay per play kind of healthcare, but preventative maintenance type healthcare. They just started from square one, and then they immediately, when they said we're going to open our doors, Merck, one of the huge pharma companies, said it was going to put a 700 person IT development center in next door to the medical school, just like that. So I'm thinking when the new med school comes here, we may get a little bit more of that cross-pollinization.
And I'm forgetting, Scott, were you at the State of the City address with Mark Mitchell? Were any of you for City of Tempe?
No.
Mayor Mitchell was talking about ASU partnering with a big med tech company too, and now I'm forgetting what he spoke to. That's been a couple months back. But when we talk about how spread we are as really a Metro Phoenix area, how important is it for our municipal leaders to have those conversations, or are they kind of competing?
It depends.
Yeah, it depends on the topic, on who it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you've spent any time here, you've been here for a long time, you know the East Valley-West Valley rivalries, you know Scottsdale is kind of its own thing. I think to a certain extent they'll cooperate, mm-hmm. and to a certain extent they want things for themselves. I think it's natural. I mean, you want, from my perspective, having covered the West Valley for so long, you know, all of those communities consider themselves bedroom communities. And for them, it's tough because they're watching all of their residents leave during the day. They're all driving to North Scottsdale or somewhere else to go work, and then they're coming home. They'd like to have more jobs there. So it becomes one of these things of how do you get this? How do you balance that out? But I think that, you know, also from another perspective, they all look at it and say, okay, if some large company locates 1,000 or 2,000 jobs here, it's good for everybody because it means that the region is getting noticed. So I think it's, yeah, they're disappointed that maybe they don't get something, but they're also like, okay, we still got it. It still landed here somewhere.
And we could say the same thing about higher ed too, right? The University of Phoenix, ASU, even hooray, little NAU. Yeah. And it, to some of our private universities as well, GCU included, same thing. They want to have a name for themselves, but that's part of what my joy about conscious capitalism is. It's an opportunity, I think, and I've never really seen it through this lens before this conversation right now. It's a chance to kind of put our competition aside and step forward and say, what's best for Arizona as a whole? What's best for us as really, entrepreneurs and business owners as we step into really embracing capitalism?
Yeah, this is just talking about a little bit earlier here on this stakeholder model of conscious capitalism and the meeting we had at Sandra Watson's office and GPEC was there and we had Chambers of Commerce there and it's Steve Selesnow from Arizona Community Foundation was there and it's in the nonprofit world and universities can fall into this is nonprofits are competing with each other. They see themselves competing with each other for limited philanthropic or limited tax dollars. In the for-profit world, yes, we compete, but I think generally people in for-profits understand the growing pie idea of free enterprise and capitalism. And so we compete, but it's a world of abundance and everybody wins. But as we think, look at chambers of commerce, are they all fighting with each other to, I'm going to bring the business to Tempe or I'm going to bring it to Phoenix or I'm going to bring it to Gilbert or Chandler or wherever. As long as the business comes in and is growing, we all win. And guess what? The tax base increases and the philanthropic dollars can increase. We've got Conscious Capitalism annual global conference coming to April. And one of the stories we're hoping to be able to tell that Sandra told us, and you're probably familiar with, but it was, I think, Lucid Motors come in and looking at various states. And Governor Ducey got together with the governor from the state of Sonora in Mexico, and they collaborated on a proposal that brought the business to the region. That's win-win. Otherwise, we could have competed with each other and the business gone other places. And so part of what I am seeing, and I'm not familiar enough with other areas of how this works, is people recognizing more and more across the board, not just businesses, but communities, and how do we collaborate and create a thriving economy for all as we cooperate and work together with a stakeholder model compared to win-lose that too often can happen.
Yeah, I think that what you see here is that because the communities are so interlinked, they're so close together that, you know, if you take something like Deloitte going into the East Valley, yeah, cities are going to lose out on that. However, they're going to get business traffic. They're going to get people moving to their cities. It's not just a matter of, okay, it's going to one city and then all the residents are going to move to that one city and they're only going to shop in that city. You know, we're just, you know, driving to work. I think I drive through Glendale 3 different times, you know, so it's like we're cutting back and forth. So I think that there's that, what you mentioned about that win-win, we're if it comes here and it doesn't come to our city, we're still going to get something out of it. Right. So I think that's a very valid point.
One of the things that Greg said early on, too, when you were talking about Austin and also what you're seeing happen in downtown Phoenix is this walking feeling where, because our weather is so gorgeous, each of our little downtown areas, even the small little downtown Chandler, downtown Gilbert, certainly downtown Phoenix with the help of Downtown Phoenix Incorporated, it's a place to be. So if I live in Chandler, you know, we talked about it again before the on-air button came on, my kiddo has to travel up to Peoria for his baseball team. And it, while it feels like a 45-minute drive, it feels like it's just another part of the, you know, obviously the same collective. Have you, and maybe Patrick mainly, when you're your journal covers some of these smaller bedroom communities. Do you see that each of them are starting to arise with their own little personalities? And I would imagine that's important then to have these larger companies coming into Arizona looking for a place to call home. That's got to be part of the draw as well, just how that city feels and what's available for them when it comes to food and beverage and entertainment.
Oh, the entertainment aspect. Yes. Let's talk about Gilbert. How they have lured in a lot of the startup restaurants, a lot of kind of the one-off things, and really built kind of their downtown based on, hey, this is where we want you to come to eat, to get some entertainment. And as a result, that has fueled, that was their goal. That was fueled their drive to land more companies.
And it's working.
Oh, it's working big time. And I'm watching other cities copy it. You know, I mean, it certainly worked for
their own flavor.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. the same type of, and I think of Austin, there's this walking, mm-hmm. this
yeah.
is.
It's a, yeah, we can't, it's a little different situation here because, you know, there is sort of such a two different worlds idea between, you know, the downtown of Austin and then the suburbs. A lot of people are, quite frankly, they're in the suburbs and they say, okay, I'm staying here. I don't need to go downtown because they have traffic issues that we don't have, which, you know, knock wood is a good thing that we're, you know, we still haven't quite, you know, they don't have the infrastructure that we have. So they have, you know, huge traffic jams at rush hour, even though getting around Austin these days is still a breeze when it's not rush hour. It still can be done quite easily. The point is that, you know, I don't know if our downtown, you know, could grow, you know, obviously there are more businesses, there are more people looking at downtown. There are some people, you know, they're shifting around. We'll have to see what happens with the, you know, with the Chase Tower. But again, we have so much growth in the suburbs. It's not like downtown is going to become a mega hub overnight. It's going to be a long-term process, and that's perfectly normal, you know, really. And if you look at the kind of city that we're in, you know, with so many different areas that companies are looking at when they want to move here, so. It's, you know, it's not a one and done thing that if you don't go downtown, you can, you know, well, you can't go anywhere else. You know, the suburbs is where the action is.
One of the things I appreciate about living and doing business here is we do have these little micro centers that are growing up, but it's still relatively easy to get around. And yes, we've got a morning rush hour and we've got an evening rush hour. But as I plan my business, if I have to go downtown Phoenix, there's a large block of hours to get downtown and do your business and wherever that is. So as downtown Phoenix grows up and becomes more walkable, or Tempe does the same thing, other communities are doing the same thing, it's still relatively easy to get around here as long as you plan your day, just understanding what the traffic situation is.
Yep, for sure.
And the infrastructure with our freeways and everything that's happening, are we all thinking that we can continue on this growth path and have this nice opportunity to get from East Valley to West Valley and everything in between? Are we optimistic about that, Patrick? I'm staring you down.
Yeah, no, not so optimistic.
Yeah? What are some of the hurdles?
I think that, I'll give you perspective from me. I mean, 5 years ago, it took me 50 minutes to get to work. Now it takes me about an hour and 10. So I think the hurdles are you're going to have a lot more people living in areas that are farther out and having those jobs for them close by, because people aren't going to want to kind of come into a larger area where it takes a long time. You know, it's just the quality of life things. And you hear that continually when people are talking economic development departments. We want that quality of life. We want places where people can live, work, and play. I mean, that's been the mantra for years here. So I think you're going to start to see, you know, you'll see downtown develop to a certain extent, but I think you'll see the suburbs develop their own cores. You know, I mean, you see it now. You look up in the Glendale Peoria area, that Bell Road around 83rd Avenue, where a town center is. You look at Scottsdale with that curve along Loop 101, where all, it seems like every tech business in Scottsdale is along that corridor. Tempe, certainly along Tempe Town Lake. So I think you're seeing that kind of develop into these regional centers where there can be a lot of jobs, there can be a lot of things. So I don't think that we're going to have those issues of everything going into the central core. So that'll be nice. That said, we'll still need a lot more infrastructure to get people around, to get people moving, and just making sure that business can be conducted, you know, I mean, with some kind of ease. Because, you know, I mean, the danger here, of course, is that we turn into Los Angeles, and where no one can get anywhere for like 4 hours.
Right.
You know, where you're just like, you get on the freeway and it's bumper to bumper no matter what day it is. So I think that that's the danger that we really have.
That's when I move to the mountains and stay.
Yeah, that's, you know.
It's, that'll be my exit.
Yeah, because we don't have any barriers to growth. We can keep growing east, west, south.
We can.
I mean, it's just, that's our biggest challenge is how do we grow vertically, perhaps?
Which, right, we're doing obviously in Tempe and in downtown Phoenix. And actually even in Gilbert too, right? A lot of these the commercial buildings are doing that dual commercial residential. Yeah. So let's segue to the residential landscape. What's the outlook for housing as we look at 2019?
Well, I think what came to pass last year is kind of the harbinger of what we'll see this year. It's, you know, good news, more of a slow and steady growth, but steady. There's a kind of a little bit of a backstory that's a problem, but in the same essence, it's helped us not become overheated in the housing market. I was just at an event the other day, and the top executive for Arizona with Lennar Homes was speaking, and he was making a hard sell pitch to this education audience that, hey, we cannot get trained workers. And, you know, community colleges and these other programs where you can, you know, maybe, you know, increase trades, education and classes is a real concern for construction companies. At the same time, because of that shortage, they can't build super fast. They can't be, you know, they can't build more houses quickly, which maybe, you know, has helped keep more of a steady keel on things. Because, you know, from what happened in the past where we were hit so hard during the previous recession. But at the same time, there's a lot of houses that are in the pipeline, you know, now some maybe surprising areas further out in the suburbs are getting a lot of permits. I think it's a good thing that we're not maybe overheated right now in housing. But a lot of people are noticing the big dip nationwide in housing starts and permits and wondering, oh my goodness. But the Angie, our residential real estate reporter, you know, spoke the other day to a lot of the local experts in the area here, and they're seeing smooth sailing for 2019. We won't look, you know, we're not looking past that yet, but so far so good.
Yeah, I think that restriction on growth has really helped them. You know, I think Angie had a story that last week that basically said during the lead up to the recession, 2007, 2008, there were 60,000 permits pulled annually. This year, I think we're looking at 24,000. So they haven't been able to grow. So that creates in its own barrier. So they're only doing it slow and steady. So they're not as worried this year. And then you have the worker issue that has been plaguing them for 10 years, you know, and ever since the recession, it kind of chased everyone out because there wasn't any work here. So that everybody went somewhere else to find jobs. I do think that you're going to see a lot more growth out in areas like Goodyear and Buckeye and Gilbert and not close in, like, you know, Goodyear can be relatively close along I-10, but I think you're going to see it farther out or farther south in there. But that's going to behoove all of the cities to develop those job corps to get something in place so that people aren't driving to Chandler or to Gilbert from Goodyear to get a job or vice versa.
Right. With the big financial companies that are making the big plays out in Chandler and Gilbert that were, you know, that have just been announced, with the home building out in those areas, that could be a good, you know, a good fit for people to be able to live out in that area where they're working. So hopefully that we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And the other big challenge with housing is affordable housing, you know, and finding that right mix of place. You know, I mean, the Valley, it's always drive until you qualify. You know, you've got to find that medium, that mix of where you're building and how much it's going to cost, because labor's gone up, prices have gone up, you know, materials have gone up. So you've got to find a place where you can give people at least some kind of shot to get housing.
I know that's one of the initiatives that Dan Clocky talked to us about when he was on with Downtown Phoenix Incorporated. Again, talking about vertically growing up in the Downtown Phoenix area, how, you know, the homes are beautiful and it's a way to bring more people in and keep them for those who want to live, work, and play in the city. But you've got to make it an affordable price point. And how do you balance that? How do you do that?
That's a tough price point to hit when you're in the downtown core.
And the schools, right? The quality of schools as well.
Yeah, for sure. You're seeing, you know, we're seeing the growth of this other new thing called the hybrid rental unit. small houses that have the feel of your own property with the yard and all that kind of thing, but they're rentals. There's a couple of companies here that are pushing those nationwide. That's a new thing that's gaining popularity with millennials, as well as, you know, downsizing type situations, but they're getting out of ownership to go to rental. But it's an area where the affordable housing mix can kind of find a common ground. So that's an interesting phenomenon to watch.
That's not a, I'm not quite grasping. This is the first I'm hearing. It's not quite condo. It's not a home that's been around for a long time. These are not those tiny homes.
No.
Describe.
It's brand new homes within a, I think, not huge homes.
And not manufactured either.
But not manufactured. No, it's sort of like a town home kind of an idea, but it seems it's less of a physical connection.
And the way that
it's laid out in the communities. There's a couple, like I said, companies that are based in our area that's their big thing, and they're pushing into multiple cities at once with this concept.
And they're keeping the price point reasonable.
Yeah,
that's part of it as well.
But as I say, it's a rental. So
And they're doing it in infill places.
Yeah.
So they don't need a whole lot of land for
it.
You know, if the houses are they're about 600 to 1,200 square feet, with shared parking, shared amenities, so they don't have to do backyards. They don't have to do a lot of different stuff. You can put it in an infill lot. You can bring it a lot closer in.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because, you know, we have so much room. We were talking about, you know, so much room in this area to grow out and to grow, you know, infill is something that's not quite, you know, an everyday word here yet, because there's, you know, if you do see infill opportunities, that's a really, people that are doing that now here are probably, you know, going to be long-term winners in terms of having property ownership and what's going to happen with the value of those properties. Because in a city like Austin, for example, there is hardly any more room in the downtown area to develop anything. It's been pretty maxed out. So we're, you know, hardly anywhere near that kind of situation. So people who can do creative things with infill here already before we're forced to do it is, people that are going to be, positioned really well for the long term.
Yeah, you see that in Tempe, because they don't have any room to grow. Their boundaries are locked in. I mean, they're where they are, so they have to go vertical instead of going out.
My first home was on Maple Avenue right across from Gamage, and because the studio is so close, every once in a while I'm heading up university to have lunch or something, and I'm amazed. I used to know that Maple Ash neighborhood very, very well, and every time I drive, I pick a different street, so maybe it's every couple weeks, and the lots that used to be there are no longer lots. They're now these, you know, 3, 4, 5 little complex. So now I think I'm better understanding what you're speaking to when you talked about obviously is infill and obviously the demolishing of the older homes, of course, and taking up, you know, and creating 3, 4 homes again on these little lots. Yeah, Scott, you guys just got done purchasing another building here at the MEC 6 community property on Broadway. What was your feeling about the commercial market as you were preparing for that purchase?
So I've done residential estate, and I'm not really involved in, and everything I'm doing is a bit player compared to all these others. And it's just back on this last question that I'll answer about the commercial side of things. It seems to me an advantage we have here is we don't have just this single downtown core that everybody's got to drive into, that there's choices as potential employers are coming here. Mm-hmm. They've got choices of downtown and many other communities. And so it's going to be just fascinating to watch. And maybe it ultimately goes to identity of some kind, that just what we have here, that there's just lots of flexibility for businesses to locate. And you're in Gilbert, you're in Chandler, you're in Scottsdale, you're in Tempe, you're in Phoenix. And there's just choices that people seem to have here that, ultimately any one community, Tempe, infill, may become an issue. I just going to be fascinating to watch on the residential side, as we can still go out, and if it's affordable, we don't have issues that some other cities have. Commercial side have been much more active, and we're still relatively small, but we're in a co-op workspace essentially here, and there's lots of others across Phoenix, and Galvanize is the bigger one downtown, and I heard WeWork, which is the 900-pound gorilla globally, that's coming in sometime. It's a world of abundance, and it's as long as the economy continues we see people needing space. And so that's, we're in the business of space. It's office space and it's some light manufacturing space. And it's the building next door to us, this building we're in, well, until this weekend, we had, there's a long backstory to it. My form of business that I grew here moved out Stantec into some other space. But this building has been 100% occupied for several years now. And so as we've had companies, they rent desks, they rent offices here, and they grow up, is we cannot serve their growing needs. The building next door was not for sale, but it was only 73% occupied. And so we just saw it as an opportunity, really, to create a small campus between what we're doing here and what we've got in this space. And we've got a gym in this building. We offer it to them over there. And we're B-class space with lots of more A-like amenities. And so as long as there's any kind of economy going on, I think commercial is going to be doing very well. Hey, are there, if the economy takes a downturn, whoever's got the sort of the highest rates, the highest A-class space, they may take some hits at some point. But I think overall, it's looks fairly robust to me.
A lot of co-work spaces, not only, of course, in the metro area, but also our suburban communities as well. Mm-hmm. It was like Maricopa. We had the mayor of Maricopa on, oh gosh, it's been a little over a year, but they were taking a look at, you know, some of the ideas of having, there's such a work from home community out right there. They were talking about, you know, when you get in that silo and you work by yourself and you want to, that's why I love Mac 6 so much, is I get to be here, even though I technically work by myself. I have so many pals right that are in creative spaces. And you mentioned Galvanize. I know Regis with their new spaces. Have you seen that office yet? Holy cow, that is a neat space.
Yeah, and Industrious just opened their second facility, the one in Scottsdale Fashion Square.
So. And Jenny Poon's getting ready to open up another Cahoots, I believe.
Oh, yes,
right in Mesa.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yep. And then WeWork is coming in the summer. Interesting, you know, they've just made a huge, huge commitment in the city of Austin. They've had a couple of locations, but now they've purchased another huge property. And I think they may be building one of their largest facilities ever there. You know, and they really changed, like you said, the 900-pound gorilla, creating the We Live concept. That's their big thing that they push in New York City, where, you know, they have the WeWork space next to the WeWork apartments, next to the WeWork leisure and recreation centers, sort of making a city within a city. Interesting phenomenon to see if that catches on.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea. And strictly speaking, they come in, they're competitors. They're all competitors to the kind of thing we're doing. But as we've got people, there's apartments across the street out the window over here. We've got people that live there and walk over here. And so I think we just, our own identity as to what we do is the Galvanize and Jenny and Cahoots, and they're all sort of competitors, but they each create different spaces and different communities for people and entrepreneurs. And it's just thriving as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And so as we happen to be here, and we're 10 minutes from Sky Harbor and 15 minutes from ASU, and there's just lots of people growing businesses close to us, and none of it concerns me. And I think it just all adds to sort of the thriving greater Phoenix opportunity that we have here, having all these sort of very different places that are spread out in different areas, and not sort of one place that everybody's got to go to do whatever their business is.
Yeah, you wonder if we'll ever get into that situation too, you know, because we have these financial companies and just other large employers that are going out into the suburbs. Will they ever create a campus along with that includes some form of condo apartment structures for employees to live next to the office? You ever wonder if they'll, you know, I wonder if that will ever catch on. I've seen, you know, there was one situation in Austin where Oracle came in and built half of a huge campus. And along with that, they purchased an existing apartment building next door for employees.
It makes sense. I mean, younger generations now are looking for those more walkable communities. And I mean, you're doing an hour drive. I don't think anybody likes that hour drive back and forth to work if we can avoid it. And so as if I were a bigger corporation moving here, it would make all kinds of sense if I'm trying to attract employees and having places that people can live and work and exercise and do what they want to do and walk their babies on the weekends and walk their dogs. That's a great idea.
Well, and I think you get into the changing dynamics of both the office environment, and it bleeds into a little bit of retail. Because if you look at what Macerich is doing with Industrious, that's not just in Scottsdale. They're going to roll that out of various malls throughout the country. And I think that it's just that changing real estate dynamic of people wanting to work. And it may not be, you know, we did something with some commercial real estate guys several weeks back where they were talking about, it may not just be small companies that want to have operations in a place like this. You know, it may be larger companies that say, you know, we don't want to have an office. We just want to station like 10 employees down at some of this co-working space. So I think it's, like you mentioned, you're competitors, but you all do different things and it's open for everybody. Right. So people can find their homes wherever they work.
Yes, people come here. We'll point them toward Cohoots. We'll point them toward Galvanize. And depending on the type of business, whatever, I mean, there's a whole community of these co-op sort of workspaces. And just hey, what we want for a thriving Arizona is for every business that is trying to grow and be in any one of these spaces or wherever they may be, if they are growing and thriving, we're all going to win.
Right.
Yeah, that's what happened actually with the most recent WeWork facility that went into Austin. I know that one because it was directly across the street from where the Austin Business Journal was. But their main point of opening that is that they already had a corporate client. So they had a tech company took over half of the space in that new co-working place. So it's really a company has this big chunk of space in there. So it's not just totally a free-for-all of small little startups that are in there. That's the model. You know, it's attractive for companies to put chunks of people in one place without having to go and build their own office or, you know, get a better deal that way. So,
and that's, I mean, just what we're trying to do here with our mini little campus here in two buildings is you can rent a desk, you can rent an office. The space we've just been able to open up is we're opening up in the next building here is anyone from 5 to 30 employees will be able to find space there and flex space, and in the building next door up to 70 employees, and all still while being part of a community. If you want to be part of a community, to just create a number of different flexible options for people, especially as they grow, that you don't have to sign just a 3 to 5 year lease and you're locked in and that's it, is creating opportunities for people to grow. And we're just one of many different businesses that are doing things like that.
And having that space flex is nice, so that if you take on maybe more than you can handle and something changes in the economy or your business, and then you have to back down again, these flex spaces provide you that opportunity to do it. Yeah, fantastic. Can you believe it's already been an hour almost? Wow. Yeah, it goes very fast. I would love, before we wrap up, though, to talk a little bit about the legislature and the vote coming up as it relates to funding for the makeover for Talking Stick Arena. Do either of you have anything to share or offer up on that?
Well, there's been, you know, our sports business reporter, Brandon Brown, has been staying up on that pretty closely. So there's going to be the votes coming up at the end of this month on the 23rd. They're finishing up their public meetings to discuss it. I think initially there was a lot of opposition. I think they've been able to lay out their case about where the money is actually coming from, that it's, you know, tourists that are funding the majority of this deal. So it's, you know, hard to say exactly how that'll go because, you know, see what happens when voters are involved. So, Patrick, do you have anything?
I think it'll probably go through. I think they've kind of done a good PR push over the last month of trying to explain their case and saying why it needs to be done, where the money's coming from. You know, they've gone out to the public. That's usually the first step. I think they did it backwards this time. They were just like, oh, we'll just go to the council and it'll be fine. No, not for $150 million. Generally, the public likes to be involved in those kind of things. So
they backed it up a little bit.
Yeah, so they took a step back. I think they went into it. I think, you know, I mean, with the Suns, it's interesting because there's everyone here that's got to love the Suns. Robert Sarver is not the most loved figure in sports here, but I think that they managed to kind of just be able to explain what they were doing.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I mean, I've seen you know, covering business for so long, you know, you could probably count millions of them, but you know how many times someone can try and, you know, sell something to the public and they do a really, if they do a bad job of it, it's going to come back and haunt them. And I've seen it many times where they think they have a slam dunk and they don't sell it properly and the public turns it down.
Yeah. Suns were in the playoffs, this would be a different discussion.
Yeah, agreed. You know? But we do still need to have, and we talked about entertainment, right? We need to keep these teams, is my thought, right? We've got to make sure that we have that beautiful draw, not only for our weather, but also for some...
It's also important for the downtown environment, too. Quite frankly,
yes.
You know, you have, you know, that... If you walk around downtown, sometimes you can walk around downtown and, you know, it's not very, it's empty. Mm-hmm. You go, when there's a game on, it's a different story.
Yeah. Needs to keep it thriving and bustling.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate all three of you joining us today. It's been a fantastic conversation. And again, welcome to Phoenix Business Journal and Arizona, Greg. Again, the honeymoon period's over, 6 months now.
I know. We're rolling up our sleeves. We're getting to work here.
Love it. Is there anything else as you anticipated our conversation today that you wanted to make sure that our listeners were aware of or thoughts before we close out our segment today from any of you?
Well, it is the opening of the legislature. Getting into that time period. So this will be my first exposure to it. But I think obviously that sets the tone for what kind of a state we are going to be going forward, I think, depending on what kind of business conscious decisions are made there. So that's what we'll be paying attention to.
Great. Patrick, anything else from you?
Yeah, I think that it'll be interesting to see as, you know, if the economy slows down nationally, kind of what kind of impacts we're going to see. I think there's always that fear of we're going to crater like we did the last time. But the truth is the Valley's changed significantly business community wise. And I think I think that we might be able to weather it a bit better than we ever have in the past. So whether that happens or not, we'll have to wait and see.
Great. Before I go to Scott, I would love to have you share with our listeners how people can stay in touch with the Phoenix Business Journal. We've done a couple other segments about the publication itself, but unless you've been under a rock, you ought to know about the Phoenix Business Journal. Is it just phoenixbusinessjournal.com and an online subscription, as well as there's even a free version, as well as the print and the beautiful book of lists? I'm kind of doing your job for you, but
and probably not
very good. And of course, the wonderful events and awards and everything that you really do offer. You bring our community together so beautifully and have for so many years. But for maybe the novice listener who is new to the Valley and isn't familiar with the publication, what could either of you tell them about it and how would they get involved?
Well, you know, we can definitely, you know, we look for people in the business community to be involved with us. One of the biggest things that we do besides providing news to people on what's going on is that we put people together, you know, through our events and through engagement with our reporters. You know, it's just, it's all part of bringing the community, you know, bringing the business community together as well. You know, we cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of business. There's no doubt about that. You know, we want, you know, our reporters are digging into stories and, you know, we're going to find out things that maybe will be a revelation to some and uncomfortable to others, but that's just the nature of the business. People can engage with us at, you know, it's bizjournals, bizjournals.com/Phoenix. That's okay. The best way to find our website. Of course, if you go into the Biz Journals world, you know, you can go to our national website and you can get connected with all of our markets, you know, there as well. So certainly do that. You know, we do have a subscription for premium content, what we call it, you know, the material that is of value to our readers. It's one of the, you know, reasons why we've done well as a chain. We charge for our information, which is valuable to readers, and it helps them make business decisions. We call it delivering business intelligence.
I got my book of lists in the mail, a week or two ago. I felt like it was Christmas all over again. Yeah. For obviously being a business-to-business radio student, it's like, oh, yes, this golden book of information, and it's wonderful. And if you haven't checked out the Phoenix Business Journal events, make sure that you have plenty of opportunities, as you mentioned, to network, but also educate, to learn, and to bring people together. Fantastic. So thank you both. Something to add, Patrick?
Yeah, we're actually just having our biggest event of the year. Our Book a List party is next Tuesday.
It is next Tuesday. January, I was there last year, and I'm going to have to make sure that I get there.
Yeah, so if people want to know what it's like at our events and how to connect with us, that's a great one to start with.
It is. That's a fun event. Very good. I'm glad you plugged that. Yeah. And Scott, last thoughts about our conversation today, and then how can folks stay in touch with you and Conscious Capitalism of Arizona, as well as Mac 6?
So I just want an appreciation for Phoenix Business Journal and the work you guys are doing. As media today is, as humans, we're drawn to train wrecks. And Greg, as you mentioned, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think Phoenix Business Journal does a great job of covering all of those. And it's not just looking for the train wrecks to sell, but it's the good, the bad, the ugly, the whole spectrum. And I'm a business as a force for good, and love the good that's spread in there as well. Because I think there's just a lot going on in Greater Phoenix and the state of Arizona that we can be proud of. And you guys do a great job of serving that market as a business person here. I mean, Conscious Capitalism. We've got the global conference is coming here. It's consciouscapitalismaz.com. It's business as a force for good, and we're going to generate some great stories for Phoenix Business Journal and others to come out of that. So
yep,
consciouscapitalismaz.com.
Yep, and that conference will be at the Sheraton Grand at Wild Horse Pass Resort and Spa, April 23rd through 25th, with a more than a national draw. It's an international draw with some really big name speakers. So if you haven't registered yet, you can do that either as a corporation or as an individual.
Right.
And we're looking for host companies as well.
Host companies to shine a bright light on the state of Arizona and businesses in Arizona.
Yeah, great opportunities to get involved.
Through that website, you can learn about that.
Great. All right. Well, and then Mac 6 is Mac6.com for any of the campus here, or again, the manufacturing workspace as well.
I've already probably said too much about Mac 6 Mac6.com.
I selfishly invited you just because I know you have such a great outlook for what we're doing in Arizona. And I think back to our beginning of our conversation, like, who are we as the state of Arizona? I know Mike Jones, next time I'll have to get Mike Jones in here as well, because their podcast, AZ Brandcast, is really focusing around that conversation every time they're here. So again, thank you so much for spending your morning with us. And we will put this up as a podcast. And of course, we'll have all the links to the two groups that we've mentioned, as well as Mac 6. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within Mac 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona Studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.